Hi, everyone, and welcome to this Open Championship edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee, and it's great to have you here with us. I'm back from vacation in Las Vegas and a little bit of Grand Canyon. Saw some wonderful sights of the Southwest United States, and hope you're doing well. Get a hold of me via Twitter, at Ryan Ballengee, and get a hold of Golf News Net every which way on your favorite social media service, at Golf News Net. Download our Roku TV app. Follow us on YouTube. You can download the GNN radio app for Android and Apple devices so you can listen to most of our podcasts, or all of our original shows at least, on your phone when you are ready to do so. This week we are talking the Open Championship. We are joined by Clark Burrows, who is a multi-time major championship contestant. He's an All-American at Ohio State. Walker Cup guy. I mean, he's done it all in terms of golf at the highest level. And we enjoy talking about betting odds with him ahead of the major championships and the big tournaments in golf. It's a good way to preview what's going on, talk through the contenders, why we like players, why we don't. And we had that conversation we just recorded a little bit ago, so we'll bring that to you. We are presented by BetDSI.com. We use their odds each and every week on all of the major tours' odds posts, and we love using BetDSI because we get to see in real time how the money's moving, and we get to see where the money's going, which is great not only for sports betting if it's legal in your jurisdiction, but even if it's not. Great for your fantasy leagues, so you can kind of see how the evolving opinions of the smarter players, and I guess the dumber players too, are working in championship golf. All right, so as mentioned, Clark's going to join us here in a minute. We recorded about a 25-minute segment to preview the Open Championship, running through all the top players, the courses, who we like from a betting perspective, who we don't like from a betting perspective, why we like them, why we don't. And just wanted to kind of be somewhat comprehensive about it in terms of the favorites, some dark horses, recent form, all kinds of things. So here's Clark and me talking a little bit earlier today.
Clark Burrows joins us again, as he does ahead of most major championships and big golf tournaments these days, to talk some betting odds, share his experience in major championship golf, and just overall give us a good preview of the biggest tournaments in golf. And this week is the Open Championship, as you know. Royal Birkdale hosts for the 10th time, which I did not realize, and first time since 2008. So, Clark, let's start at the top. I feel like this major championship is one of the most open and unpredictable in the last 4 or 5 years. We don't have a clear number one, a clear guy that everyone's got their eye on and their money on. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, you know why? It's because a lot of the top-notch players, Dustin Johnson, what's he done in the last 2 months? Nothing. How about Rory McIlroy? Other than wear them turquoise shoes, he hadn't done anything. Missing cuts. Henrik Stenson, another top player, hasn't done much. All the top players, it seems, are kind of struggling to find their game. Maybe not Jordan Spieth or Matsuyama, but the other guys haven't really done much in the past couple months. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I'm there with you. I've done a bunch of radio interviews, and people go, well, give me your one pick, the one guy you're going to put, you would put money on. I honestly don't know that I would put money on just one guy. I'd probably have to put on 5 or 6 or 7 guys to feel somewhat comfortable about it. And I keep coming back to Ricky Fowler because he's managed to get in contention in both the first two majors this year. Yes, he has crapped the bed in the final round of both of them, but he crapped the bed less at the U.S. Open, and it seemed like he's starting to get comfortable with that major championship contention, and he plays pretty well in the wind. So that, of the guys who are kind of in the top 20 in the world right now, he stands out to me as a guy who I should really like this week.
Yeah, I like Ricky. He always seems to botch it up, like you said. Yeah. Like you said, he played golf at Oklahoma State, and the wind blows pretty good there. It's hard not to like Ricky. I actually am starting to really like Ricky. The reason I like Ricky, he doesn't mess around. He plays fast. I like the guys who don't mess around. He's ready to hit, gets up, hits. You know, he putts. He doesn't take a lot of time. I like that. I think that's refreshing. I get tired of watching these guys take, forever to hit the ball. And I'm really starting to like Ricky. He's kind of toned down his dress code, and I like that. And, yeah, it's hard not to like him. Another guy that I like, I don't know, when he was 17, he played there as an amateur, Justin Rose.
Yeah.
he's kind of going in there under the radar. No one's really talking about him. He played a couple weeks ago at the Scottish Open, and he played solid. I think he finished tied for fourth. I think that's my pick. If I had to pick one guy, I'd either go with, well, I'm going to pick two guys. I'd either go with Fowler or I'd go with that Justin Rose.
Yeah, it's hard to argue about Justin Rose. He seems to have come back from that little injury he's going through. I think it was a back problem. He seems to be going okay now. I think that he'll think a lot about his dad, which seems to motivate him a lot. It seemed to motivate him a lot at the 13 U.S. Open that he thought about his dad a lot that Sunday when he won. And if that's
no one's mentioning him.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised about that because for really 2 or 3 years after winning the U.S. Open, he was on the tip of everyone's tongue. All right, well, Justin Rose just won a major. He should win this one. He can win that one. He should take that one. At least the first three majors of the year. You know, people kind of laid off him at the PGA because he's not a guy that tends to go very well at a PGA Championship setup, but I just feel like people have laid off of him, and maybe deservedly so on Adam Scott and some guys who are kind of getting in their later 30s now, that the expectation is they're too old to win another major, or a first major for that matter, and that doesn't seem to make sense because the average winner of the last, six British Opens is like 38.
Exactly. Experience pays off, and also, what I've been hearing from Royal Birkdale is it's not going to be so much a putting contest.
Yeah.
You know, some of the weaker putters like Matsuyama, even Justin Rose, Sergio Garcia, you know, look at the Masters. That's not a putting tournament anymore. It's ball striking.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a guy like that. And, you know, Ricky drives you good, but he's a great putter.
Mm.
And I think some of these guys that are not that great at putters, like Justin Rose and Matsuyama, I think they're going to do well.
Yeah, I think so. So long as they feel comfortable when the wind comes. And that's the thing that worries me. And you said something earlier that I really like about Fowler, that he doesn't waste time. He doesn't waste time thinking about too much about a shot. He feels locked in. He pulls off the shot. He doesn't back off a lot versus someone like Spieth, who talks a long time to get into the shot and tends to back off. I feel like when you play in the wind, you've got to decide and go and just go with it. And Spieth doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that can do that very well.
And usually your first instinct is your best. And that's what Ricky does. He steps up, he decides what he's going to do, and he hits the shot. He pulls it off great, and if he doesn't, you never see Ricky moaning and groaning.
Yeah.
You never see him throwing a club. If he makes birdie, it's the same as if he made bogey. And that attitude goes a long ways in a major championship.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I got to raise my right hand because I said after the U.S. Open, the way that he reacted that, hey, this is just a step in the process. You know, you lose a lot, so you got to take positives away. I didn't like that. I didn't like that he wasn't, not that he wasn't angry, but that he wasn't more in a hurry to win like Brooks Koepka was. I think that will actually benefit him this time around because all of the things that can go wrong that you can't control at a British Open where there's wind means you got to be willing to accept that you're going to get some bad breaks. And I think Ricky Fowler can do that.
Well, that's the one thing that's gotten a little better, but every time they interview Ricky Fowler, it's a standard answer.
Yeah.
It's not like interviewing Patty Harrington where, you know, it's a real person talking, you know. But Ricky's just got a standard answer to everything. And that kind of, I don't really like that, but I am starting to really like that. I like it because he just steps up and he hits it. When he's putting, he lines it up and then he hits the putt.
Yeah.
These other guys back off. Like you said, they're talking. And Matsuyama, I really like Matsuyama. But, boy, he's hard to watch sometimes with that putter. He backs off, he backs off. He, oh, better reline it. And, you know, I don't really like that. But how about Tommy Fleetwood? He grew up 2 miles from there.
Yeah, he's kind of the other guy I'm going to hang my hat on because he's a local, like you said. He's playing the best golf, probably the third best golf on the planet in the last 18 months, behind Dustin Johnson and Jon Rahm.
Alex Noren,
although he's starting to fade, he's not.
He is. I wouldn't back him this week.
So, you know, you got Fleetwood soundly in the top five, let's say, of the best golf for the last 18 months. And he won the French Open, which can be subject to wind. He played pretty well in the Irish Open, which was links, not very windy, but linksy. So he's got the pedigree. He's got the game. I mean, it just seems like from an odds perspective, everyone thinks that same thing. That if I'm not going to get behind Dustin Johnson or Jordan Spieth or you name a top five player through that, you know, that hard because you just don't know, then everyone seems to have gone, all right, well, I'm going to put my money on Tommy Fleetwood because I know he's playing really well. I just know he's never won a major before.
Yeah, I think you can get Tommy Fleetwood about 25-1.
That's good.
You can get Matsuyama at 20-1.
That's
spectacular. And what about Rory McIlroy? What can you get him at? I mean, I wouldn't take him because I you know what? Let's just – what did you think of that Steve Elkington's Twitter thing?
Elk and I are kind of buddies, and
I know, but
he got owned. He got owned pretty bad. But that said, I think Rory quickly realized he doesn't need to answer every argument, and he's a guy that wants to defend himself against all comers, and that just becomes a distraction. That distracts him from playing good golf. It distracts him from his new marriage. It distracts him from getting right with his new equipment, all that stuff. And you've seen the results. He just hasn't played very well of late, and he keeps missing cuts. And I feel like...
No, he quit the Twitter.
He quit Twitter. I mean...
That shows me a weakness. Now, yeah. I'm not on Twitter. Maybe you are. But isn't that part of the territory? If you're going to be on Twitter, I mean, you got to take the medicine when it comes or block the guy, right?
Right. I mean, it can be a vile place. It can be pretty nasty, but you know that. You know it's possible. I'm sure Rory knows that, being a guy who has millions of followers, that I'm sure he gets plenty of people every day are like, you suck, you stink, why did I bet on you, I hate you, you know.
I don't like your turquoise shoes.
Yeah, I don't like your shoes, I don't like your clubs, all this.
When he wore those turquoise shoes, I thought he was wearing Michelle Wee's shoes, and then I thought, well, heck, he couldn't be wearing Michelle Wee's shoes because she wears size 10, and little Wee Rory only wears size 8.
I just feel like what he leaves himself to distraction a lot with new equipment, with Twitter feuds, with personal stuff, and that doesn't mean he doesn't care about winning. I think he really does care about being one of the best golfers to ever live. But he also cares about a lot of other stuff that doesn't really matter. And it gets in the way
exactly
of the stuff
he does. Didn't you just let stuff like that roll off your back?
Well, maybe that's not how he's cooked. Maybe that's not
how he should be.
He's got to change that about himself. And I don't know how you do that at almost 30 years old, but... But you got to do that. You got to figure out a way to get more mentally tough, and just forget.
I agree with Elkington. I think he is bored.
I don't disagree with Elk's view. I mean, he plays like a guy who sometimes is just checked out, that he's not interested. And the problem is, if you turn it off, sometimes the switch doesn't come back on when you want it to. And I think that's what happened at the U.S. Open. He tries to switch it back on, and usually he can do it when he gets kind of desperate or he smells that he's kind of near contention. He can turn it on, but the last couple times it just hasn't, and that's why he's played poorly.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, what do you think about Jon Rahm? We got everybody on the Rahm bandwagon now that he won by 6 at the Irish Open after two piss poor starts. One at Memorial, one of the U.S. Open, slamming clubs, cussing, looking like a baby. And all of a sudden, he's back.
I watched Rahm play last March, not this, a year ago March, when he was playing for Arizona State in Las Vegas at a big college tournament. We went out and watched him play 3 or 4 holes, and I saw him throw 3 or 4 clubs and was whining and moaning the whole way around. So when things go bad for Jon Rahm, that's what you're going to see. And a lot hasn't gone wrong for John Rahm. Every week, you know, he's played, 25 times, and 23 of them he's played good. So I like to see the other end of the spectrum when things are going bad and see how mature he really is. What'd you think of that ball marking incident?
I feel like that was a lack of judgment on his part. Where it's part of using that poker chip deal where I don't mind if you're a 20 handicap and use a poker chip. It's fine. But if you're a professional, that leaves room for error. That leaves doubt. I would use the smallest possible marker that I could see and easily put down and put back.
Yeah, instead of a manhole cover.
Yeah, because it just gets in the way. You got to move it a lot. All of a sudden, you got to think about that. But if you use a small mark that goes in the ground, you never think about it. And you don't have to worry about being called for a weird penalty like that.
Well, don't you think that they screwed it up?
Yeah, I think he should have been penalized. I think he clearly broke the rules, and but now they've given him an out because you could say, oh, well, he used reasonable judgment. He was within an inch. You know, that the new interpretation of the rule, which I think is pretty well bogus. I mean, if one inch, if you can't repair a spike mark and you can move the ball an inch and say it was within reasonable judgment, you might have just saved yourself a major championship. So if I'm John Rahm, I'm no way apologetic for that. Okay, so what? I didn't get a penalty. I got out of the way of something.
Look at Lexi Thompson. How do you think she feels?
Yeah, I mean, if that happened to Lexi last week, she wins a second major championship. So I don't understand how all of a sudden we can be okay with what John Rahm did when it cost Lexi Thompson 4 strokes 2 months ago.
A day later.
And it just doesn't add up to me. But that all said, you brought up a good point about Rahm, and I think it still remains regardless. It's probably going to remain for as much of his career as humanly possible, and that is that he has to get off to a good start when he plays, or otherwise he loses. Because he starts getting down on himself, he gets upset, and he slams clubs, and things go bad, and then all of a sudden he's missed the cut.
Yeah, well, just like I told you, Ryan, he's played how many tournaments? Let's say he played 25. I don't know the exact number. But he's played good in 23 of them. So, or 22 of them, you know what I mean? So let's just see when he hits a rough patch, like, say, Rory, where he misses cuts and he doesn't play good for 5 or 6 tournaments. Then we might see the real John Rahm.
Yeah.
Right now we haven't seen anything because all he does is win second, third, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So he's still a variable. He's hard to back because you just don't know. And you're taking a guess in the wind that he gets the right draw and he handles it well. That's too much for me to take. I'm just not ready to...
Rather take Jordan Spieth over him, actually.
Yeah, I think so, too. And even still, I'm skeptical about him. And we still have not talked at all about the number one ranked player in the world. So what... We've seen Dustin Johnson at the U.S. Open... junk. He didn't play the Masters, so we've got basically no major profile on him this year. What on earth can we expect from him?
I don't know. I mean, that guy is so talented, you never know. You know, actually at the U.S. Open, he didn't hit the ball that bad. He just couldn't make a putt. He putted horrendously. But who knows, you know? He contended at the Open Championship before. I think he was leading and then blew out, remember?
Yeah,
a couple years ago.
2011, he had the chance to win and put that 4-iron out of bounds, or 2-iron out of bounds on the par 5 that cost him the championship on 14. Now, Clark played well down the finish and he won, but nonetheless, that was one of those that got away from DJ. But despite that, he still has a really good record in the Open. He plays links golf pretty well. So, based on previous results, I think, okay, well, that... then this should be good. But then you wonder what's happened to him in the last few months based on the results. You go, well, maybe he's not doing as well right now. And well, so I'm reluctant to get behind him.
Yeah, these guys aren't going to hit any drivers.
Nope.
Phil Mickelson's not even carrying a driver.
Until it blows 40 miles per hour, but that's another story.
No, he won't. He's got a hot 3-wood.
Yeah, he does. He's got that little two wood.
And these other guys, they aren't going to hit drivers till like number 15.
15 and 17.
But so that's going to be – that must be some tough track, though, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think the winning score will be?
I saw an interesting statistic. I think Kyle Porter from CBSSports.com tweeted it. Something to the effect of the first Open they played there, the winning score when it was par 72 was 9 under par. The last time it was 3 over par, and it was a par 70. So I tend to like the idea of playing in that even par range, especially if we're going to get wind. If the wind
shows and rain.
Up, wind and rain, for that matter. So if that shows up as expected, all of a sudden 3 over doesn't sound that crazy, especially if how penal the golf course plays when you miss the fairway.
They're saying that that's the toughest 14-hole stretch in the world.
It's hard to argue with it. I mean, if you look at the past Opens and the guys that won, or the guys that kept the ball in play and moved between the dunes. And if you did that, you won. If you didn't, you stunk. And there's no
right.
There's no playing all over the yard at Birkdale. You're either in it or you're dead.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I can't wait to watch it, man. It's going to be I hope it does blow hard.
Yeah, I mean, especially after the U.S. Open where we didn't get that wind that really Aaron Hills needed to be defended, to be able to
get 16 under, and you liked it, but I didn't like it.
I mean, I like the golf course architecturally, but the wind wasn't there to make it interesting, and I'm hoping that Birkdale gets the wind that makes it especially interesting, and maybe we get some randoms. Maybe we don't get the best players in the world as the contenders, but we get a good tournament. And it's always been entertaining at Birkdale, if nothing else. It's always been entertaining.
Right.
And that's all that's all you want. I just want a major that's nearly as good as the Masters was, nearly as interesting as the Masters was for this one.
Right. What do you think about Justin Thomas wearing a tie and a cardigan?
I'm a big fan. I like it. I like a little fashion gamble. He usually looks pretty good when he plays. He pays attention to detail, and I like that about a guy.
I think the only guy who could pull that off was the late, great Payne Stewart, and he did that, if you remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But Justin Thomas wearing a tie and a cardigan.
We're just going to have to see. I can't wait to see it, man. I can't wait. And this is the one time of year where I'm willing to get up early and watch golf. I mean, really early and watch golf.
Or stay up late.
Or stay up all night.
Over here, I'm going to watch it at 11:30 at night.
That ain't bad.
I think it comes on at 1:30 Eastern, right?
Yeah, it's 1:30 Eastern.
Are you going to wake up? What time are you going to wake up?
I usually am up one way. Either I take a nap or I stay up for the first maybe hour. And then I go back to bed, kind of wake up around 6 and, you know, 5 or 6 and reset. You know, see where things are in the 4 hours I went to sleep.
Well, I woke up last week at 2:30 and watched that first round of the Scottish because Rory and Ricky and Stenson were playing.
Yeah.
And I stayed up all night. I didn't go to bed till there was light out when I went to bed. But I don't know, I just, you know, if you get a pairing like that, I'm a golf fan and I like to watch it.
Yeah, I do
so
too.
I'm going to wake up.
I like watching this stretch of the schedule. Now the European Tour has built up, the Irish Open, and the Scottish Open's always been pretty good, and that's
they're going to great courses.
I mean, they're going to incredible places, and they're great lead into the British Open, and you have 3 great weeks of links golf. I mean, how do you not like that?
I like it. I like watching the Irish. I like watching the Scottish, and hell, it comes on tonight.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
11:30 tonight.
Pretty good.
I'm going to have to get off this podcast afterwards and take about a 2-hour nap.
There you go. You got to plan out your day before you get up late to watch it.
Yeah, my girlfriend will think I'm nuts, but
hey,
you know what?
You just joined
She's
us
right.
Golf
I am
course.
Nuts.
You just got off the golf course. You know, you need a little R&R to get ready for watching golf. Anyone should understand that.
No, she understands the naps. She doesn't understand me getting up at 1 o'clock in the morning to watch golf.
Well, just get her up and watch it with you, and then maybe she'll be a
kid. She didn't watch it. She'll be sleeping, but I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch as much as I can. Now, is that on, really, from like 1:30 in the morning? When does it end? 4 in the afternoon?
Yeah, they have 14 hours of coverage, basically.
Oh, man. I guess I have to, like, pick and choose, you know, look at the pairings.
Yeah, you got to take a nap around the midway point, 1 to 2 yep. hours, come back, see what's happening.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. That's exactly what I'll do. I have to plan it out here because I forgot, man. It's coming on tonight.
Getting excited.
Yeah, I like it.
All right, Clark, you're the man as always. Thank you for having some time for us to come on the show, talk a little bit about major championships. Of course, we'll do it again for the PGA next month at Quail Hollow in Charlotte, and we'll be up watching together, I'm sure.
Okay, Ryan, thanks a lot for having me on the show, and enjoy the golf.
Thanks again to Clark for being on the show. He is always a fun guest, always fun to talk to. He just come off the golf course, made some special time for us so that we could record the podcast. So thank you to Clark for being on the show again, and as always. So we are going to try to do at least one more podcast this week of the Open Championship. At some point, we'll do a reaction podcast, maybe the halfway point, maybe Saturday night. We're debating that, but it'll show up, and hopefully you'll be able to listen to it and enjoy it. But we want to do some kind of reaction to it at some point during the course of the weekend. So check out for that when you get a chance, hopefully waking up either Saturday morning or Sunday morning with something to listen to before we finally get the leaders in action and maybe crown a champion this weekend. So thank you to all of you for listening. Thanks for supporting our show. If you do listen to us through iTunes, be sure to head to the iTunes store, check us out on the podcast page, and make sure you give us a 5-star review. We would appreciate that. Helps us reach more people. And check out our Roku TV app. So if you want to watch more of us on TV, we're doing more and more videos, especially starting this week and continuing forward. So you can watch us on TV, and soon we'll be on Apple TV as well. And above all else, make sure you head to our website, golfnewsnet.com. And if you would be so kind, join GNN Plus for just $10 a year. You get special access to all kinds of fantasy research and tools and an ever-increasing amount of content that is exclusive as well, exclusive giveaways for our members. So check that out for just $10 a year. We're not asking too much, except about as much as a sleeve for Pro V1s. So head over to golfnewsnet.com and sign up for GNN Plus today. All right, until later in Open Championship week when we have something to talk about, some real golf at Royal Birkdale, I am Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.